this for a long time. I'm pretty good. I'm not a professional bodybuilder, but I'm kind of a pro at shots. Okay,
been doing steroids. Them
for a long time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a professional drug user.
Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we discuss a couple of the things that Ronnie had said on the Joe Rogan interview. No, we're not going to really talk about the body fat stuff. We're going to talk about some other things. After that, we've got listener questions. Everything from the idea of weight moves weight. Is that logical? Does that really apply to the real world? How's the contest season going to be affected by everything that's going on in 2020? We discuss Skip's nasty shot, plus a bunch more, guys. So stay tuned. We're going to do all that right here, right now on Blood, Sweat, and Gear.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally with Skip Hill and S2H. Our programming is all brought to you by GetAzoth.com. You can use our code ADVICES10 at both the Amazon page and the GetAzoth.com page. Look what I got with me here. We're also brought to you by... That's some team skip. TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. I'm just going to start right up. So here we go. Ronnie Coleman was on Joe Rogan last week. Ronnie said that he used less PEDs than others and said that it was all doctor prescribed. So is he saying that the FDA approved levels for the Mr. Olympia? Did you catch that part, Scott? Like, I didn't catch the dosing conversation.
I think that's kind of paraphrased, but I think he was going into another topic about his job when he was competing, and then it kind of went back and forth a little bit. But yeah, he said that he didn't use hardly anything, and that I mean, I think a lot of people know this already. He didn't start using gear until I think the year he won his first Olympia or the year before.
Really?
So yeah, because he was like coming in like 15th and he was not doing well.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And that's when he and this is him. This is open information, but he went to Flex Wheeler and said, "Hey, how are you guys looking so good? You know, what's going on?" Because he just didn't know anything about it. Yeah. And that's who kind of guided him. Or did. He said guided him completely.
No kidding.
So Skip. I don't know, man. The dude's a beast. I mean, if you're that genetically gifted, it doesn't take much, probably.
Skip, if this show doesn't work out the way you want it to, maybe you should try steroids.
Maybe.
Let me see how it goes. A lot of the guys are using them nowadays.
Take my mediocre genetics slightly, you know, past the level that I'm at right now.
Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah.
We had a comment saying Skip is looking pale.
No,
I think they're being sarcastic. That was Bill. What's up, Bill? So, let's look at this. There's no doctor that's going to prescribe Tren, right?
Yeah, I think what he's doing is he's kind of covering. And look, I don't know. I'm speculating, but you know, he's kind of covering the fact that he was a cop and he had to do what he had to do. And you know, I trained a lot of cops. I trained a lot of people on, you know, SWAT and things like that. And you know, this is back in the day. You got to understand, this isn't just 4 years ago either. This is back in the, you know, late '90s when it was. I'm guessing, but I think I'm correct. It was starting to become, you know, the police agencies at that time were starting to become aware of, you know, gear usage among cops, and especially in the bigger cities and the bigger departments, and they were talking about testing and that sort of thing. So he was probably just, you know, I'm sure he still has relationships with the higher ups there and stuff. I don't think he really probably wants to give away too much information. I won't, you know, I'm not going to say that he's lying and that's, but I can understand if he isn't being completely forthcoming, you know, with what he was doing and that sort of thing. Now, I don't know the levels, if that's public, you know, knowledge. I don't look into things like that. Not because it's not accurate, but I tend to just go by what I hear from the actual person as far as what they're taking. And then I know that unless they're bullshitting me, it's actually, you know, 100% accurate or much more accurate than something I might hear. But I think, too, it needs to be, and again, I'm speculating, but, you know, the IFBB has a vested interest in, you know, guys at that level too, that could potentially be in law enforcement or in a situation where they don't want someone that high up in the sport covered or having problems with legality or, you know, legal issues or career issues, things like that. So I'm not saying this is what they do, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that they have legitimate means to make prescriptions or have doctors that can prescribe,
sure,
to make situations like that more legit from a legality standpoint. Again, I'm not saying that that's what they're doing, so I don't want anybody in the NPC or IBB getting pissed at me because I'm over here spouting off information about what they're doing. Yeah. All I'm saying is I think that that would be feasible and it would make sense. It's logical.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about it on the Drugs and Stuff podcast before that, you know, I mean, even like take the Olympic level. I mean, all it takes is a prescription to, you know, I mean, those guys, they've got doctors. If you and I could find doctors to kind of like cover some of our bases, then I'm sure that, you know, the IFBB, I'm sure Ronnie Coleman, you know, could. But I'm guessing.
I think the IFBB's got to help him because, I mean, I'm thinking of that time frame. So when did he win his last Olympia? 2006?
Was it six?
Seven, six, somewhere around there. I mean, I think there was HRT, yeah, doctors that were, I know this for a fact.
Five?
Were prescribing, you know, 400 or 500 milligrams a test a week, 400 or 500 milligrams a DECA, Anavar growth. I mean, that was not uncommon to be able to go get that prescription. All it just had to be made in a compound pharmacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but from a legality standpoint, it doesn't matter what the dosage is. I mean, really, all
I'm talking about, the FDA guidelines are not that high, though.
Right. But all I'm saying is when it comes down to a legality, you know, if Ronnie was doing 3 grams, but he had a prescription for testosterone, then it doesn't matter what he's taking. He's got prescription. They're not going to drug test him. They're not going to check his levels. They're just going to check whether he's in possession and whether he has a prescription to see whether it's legal or illegal. And as long as he has a prescription, then he's legal.
And they had to know.
More like, could he have won the Olympia on that lower amount? Mm. Yeah, I mean, sure he could.
Yeah, I would think so.
The dude was a freak anyway.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people struggle with that statement, though. And in fairness, I agree with you. I don't know that he could. I don't know that he couldn't. But I know with someone that genetically gifted to go that far, I mean, this is, you know, along lines of people like Phil Heath, who people still can't believe, you know, that Phil or Ronnie can do such a small amount of gear and be that successful. And when they do start hitting gear like normal people, they just blow up and all of a sudden they put on, you know, 25 pounds and they can't figure it out. Boy, they must have some magical concoction, some myostatin inhibitor that they're keeping secret from everybody else. Hmm. When in reality, they just respond and...
Except low myostatin.
The rest of us just fucking don't respond like that.
Hmm. That's funny.
I did in that interview, he said that even after he started taking gear, he didn't get any stronger.
Really?
Mm-mm. He said there wasn't any real increase in strength. I mean, he was already like pretty insane strength wise, but he said he didn't notice much strength gain.
Huh.
You have to take what he says with a grain of salt too. He's a nice enough guy. He's down to earth. He's very humble. He'd probably be a good conversation, but this isn't the most articulate, knowledgeable man either when it comes to these things. I mean, to make the claim that he did, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, this guy is the king.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, there's pro bodybuilders and then there's Ronnie, and I hope that the rest of the pro bodybuilders out there see that they are not within, you know, they're not standing next to him, they're standing below him. I'm not trying to sound disrespectful, but he's the king. At the same time, when you make a claim that your body fat is that low, it is indicative of the fact that you kind of don't know what you're saying, because that's not close. That's a very inaccurate statement. And things like that, when statements like that are made to me, it discredits that person, and I don't want to hear too much more of what they have to say, because then I question everything they're saying.
Hmm, that's a good point. I know.
You didn't say it on purpose. Yeah. I wasn't trying to, you know.
Yeah, we talked about that on Muscle Mind. Scott broke down the way that like body fat testing works, and it's like the way he explained it, you could see it's like it's a very imperfect science. So it may have legitimately read 0.33% body fat, but you know, yeah, I know what you mean. It's like once
he said he was 0.33.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, and then he said at one point he was like negative body fat, like less, yeah, you know, negative.
Would you like give it away?
Yeah. Big T just commented, and he said that he went to a Night of the Champions after party once. He said there was a few pharma guys there giving out their business cards.
Hey, who said this?
One of our listeners.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Business savvy. I mean, business acumen.
I don't doubt
good,
that.
Good for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. You know, I think that you're right though about the, about his ability, you know, and what it was with or without gear. There are, I mean, I, like you said, Skip, I think it's hard for people to wrap their head around like how good other people can be, better than us, better than me. But I mean, I can think of like people that I've worked with. I can think of one guy in particular who, you know, started winning state level shows with like test and an oral at the end. And then, you know, national level shows with like test and a little bit of master on, and that was it. And then when he finally was competing at the pro level, that's when he decided he was going to try Tren. Like, he didn't need it. Like, he could have probably done okay without it, but he's like, okay, now I'm going to try that. So it's like, you know, at the same time, there's a, there's many of us out there who haven't even stepped on a stage yet. And that, you know, people are running a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they are out there though.
Think about the unspoken part of that too. It's kind of bothersome to me, not the winning and not being, you know, they don't have to take as much gear to win and kick my ass. But what does bother me is they don't have to take very much and they don't have to worry about health markers.
Oh, yeah.
And they can just climb through the sport. I mean, think about, you know, Ronnie going to the Olympia and he's been on gear for 1 year and he, you know, allegedly, and wins the Olympia. He's not worried or anxious about bad blood markers at that point.
God, no. Yeah.
You know, and the rest of us here are trying to climb the ladder and we're on the second rung after, you know, 10 or 20 years, some of us longer.
Yeah.
Going, damn, I hope I'm good.
Yeah.
My health, my blood says I'm good, but you know, that's that type of shit. Yeah. I think it's a completely different game and they don't have to worry about that as much.
Well, look,
that's
at rough. Like, look at, what's his name? Who just did his last Arnold, Dexter Jackson. I mean, he's a guy who he probably hasn't had to use much. Look at the way he trains. He's taken big chunks of time off. He's, you know, never been a guy who's had to like kill himself in the gym. And I think that we can, you know, people have looked down on him, maybe ripped on him even because of that lack of, you know, quote unquote intensity. But at the other end of the spectrum, he's going out on his own terms and he could probably keep going. I bet you Dexter could keep competing for another 5 years and still be competitive, you know?
I don't doubt that either. I think it buys resentment is really what people feel in situations like that, because we have to work so hard. You know, the majority of people have to work so hard and do things that the sometimes the genetically gifted don't have to do. Not always. I mean, sometimes genetically gifted people will still work their, you know, they work their asses off and they work as hard as everybody else, but not all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you look at all the Mr. Olympias, very few of them have drugged their way to a championship.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Think about it. Run them down. I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know much about Samir back in the day, you know, but clearly genetic superiority, you know, kind of on another level with the Lee Haney's and, you know, Jay Cutler's and, you know, not only take away the gear component for a minute, but even training. I don't know. Lee Haney seemed to train pretty hard. I'm just running down in my head. Jay Cutler always was telling Phil, back off.
Yeah.
Back off. Like, what the hell are you doing throwing around 150s for? You want to be in this game and you want to win, or do you want to battle injuries for the rest of your life? So, which is not to imply Jay didn't train hard. What I'm saying is he wasn't training like Branch Warren, though.
Yeah.
He wasn't training like Dorian. I think Dorian, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but he may be the exception with Ronnie, of course. But let's be fair. I mean, Ronnie is, you know, he's got some problems, whether they're directly related to bodybuilding or not. I think most of us can say there has
powerlifting too.
Yeah, there's got to, it plays a part. I mean, come on now. He may have had some hereditary component there, but it damn sure didn't help to be moving weight like that.
Yeah.
His entire back and neck have been fused top to bottom.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Like you said, 13 surgeries or something.
Yeah.
Both his hips have been replaced. Yeah.
So another Ronnie thing here, he stated that the DEA was pursuing the IFBB to cool it on PEDs, and the IFBB asked Ronnie to drop size for his last Olympia that he won. Is this fact or fiction, or somewhere in between. Did you hear that part, Scott?
Yes. And I think he said he came in like 30 pounds lighter for his last Olympia.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody could notice that, but I don't know, man. I think the guy's got pretty good integrity, and he's pretty honest. And for him, I think when that subject came up, he didn't bring that subject up. It was asked of him more.
Okay.
From Joe. So, it's possible. I mean, you know, there's a lot more backdoor things that go on in business and government and things than people might realize. So it could be possible. I don't know.
I hope it's not true. I do. I hope that it's fiction, but I can certainly see how it is possible. What I don't understand is why the DEA would be going after IFBB or talking to the IFBB, because it isn't the IFBB that is pro-drugs. It's the athletes themselves. The fact that they don't test doesn't mean that they're telling everybody to take gear. That's an individual, personal type of thing. So I'm not real sure what kind of an impact that having Ronnie come in lighter and not take as much gear would have, to kind of pacify, you know, the DEA or anybody. Because if we'd have heard about it, that'd be different. There may be a message that was trying to be sent there. But no one heard about that. I didn't hear about it till we were talking about pre-show.
If I think about it, if my timing's right, I think that was about the time remember that kid that committed suicide? He had used gear. He was like 17. His dad went on the big tour and went to Congress.
Taylor Hoots?
Wasn't that about that time frame? It may well have been. That time frame is probably pretty close. But at the same time, and again, it's speculation. Here's what I could see happening. Maybe they were looking at Ronnie. Maybe they were looking at him, and he was dealing with the police force and everything else, and there was some incentive, or the IFBB came to him and said, they're looking at you. You're probably not going to want to be on a bunch of gear, and he decided to either drop gear or drop it down to damn near nothing. Maybe that's where the prescription came in. Maybe he was running borderline TRT or high-dose TRT and ended up dropping 30 pounds. With a genetic predisposition like that, he could drop weight, that much weight, and probably he might still be able to win on low doses like that. That to me would be a little bit more feasible or believable, I guess, than going to the IFBB, because I don't see the benefit of the IFBB coming down on someone like Ronnie to do that when there was no message to be sent because it was hush hush anyway. I ask you guys, what kind of a message would that send? Nobody knew he came in 30 pounds. They just knew he kicked the shit out of everybody again.
Yeah. I don't know. I know that the Taylor Hooten Foundation, they follow Victoria. They like her.
Oh, is that right? That's unfortunate, because he doesn't like me and I don't like it. He finally said to me one day, we were exchanging emails back and forth for a couple months. Yeah. He finally said, just leave me and my family alone.
Really?
Yeah. Really? He had pretty much had it. And I was very personal with the things I said to him.
Yeah.
And I told him that I believe that he carries a lot of guilt because of what his son did. I was honest and I wasn't insensitive. I said, I think you carry a lot of guilt as a father. Yeah. I'm a father as well. But you're blaming a compound when maybe there was a lack of communication and maybe he sent you signs and maybe your kid was already depressed and the gear didn't play anywhere near the part that it could have. And you didn't heed those warnings or those signs and you're up everybody's ass about compounds and you're on this mission to get everybody off these drugs when maybe you should be on a mission of listening to your kids, talking, communicating, seeing signs of depression and understanding that a lot of teenagers deal with depression anyway, even without steroids.
Yeah.
And it was at that point, there was only one or two more emails after that. He finally said, just leave. I'm going to politely ask you to just leave me and my family alone.
What he likes about Victoria is that, I mean, she's obviously not pro-steroid. She can't be, you know, from her perspective. But she's also not anti-steroid either. Her viewpoint is to give people the information so that they understand, which I think is what I would want to do, too. I wouldn't say that any of us are pro-steroid. Are you pro-steroid, Skip?
No, I'm not pro-steroid. And I don't know his stance these days either. This has been a quite a while. Maybe he would be like, you know what, that Skip guy, I didn't used to like him, but he does preach healthy use and everything. I don't know that he would say that, but what I'm saying is,
yeah,
you know, maybe things have changed over the course of time. Maybe he has no fucking idea. Maybe he forgot and doesn't even remember, and I don't know. But no, definitely not pro-steroid. At the same time, though, I neither advocate nor condone, and each person can make up their own mind on, you know, what they want to do. So
yeah, and that's what I figured. I mean, I kind of already knew the answer, but I wanted to hear you say it.
It's a rhetorical question. Yeah, it's a personal issue. It's just like when you're dealing with clients. I will never push a client or advocate for a client to come, you know, I call it the dark side. Because once you step over that line, it's very difficult to step back.
Yeah.
So if you're not 100% sure, I'm not going to be that. I'm here for information based on my experience. I'm not a medical professional. I'm only giving you my experience with myself and my clients over the time that I have been doing this. You come to the decision that you're comfortable with. And when you make that decision, then I can help to advise in a healthier, safest way possible to optimize your progress with as little use as possible.
Yeah.
A lot of people that are anti-steroid, they come from a really very misinformed and uneducated stance on it. You know, I mean, I've had discussions with people that were anti, but they don't know anything. It's just, you know, it's like saying I'm anti-cars, you know. It's a very general, broad attack. You know, they don't really understand anything about it. It's like saying if you drink, you're going to die. What if you drink one beer? That's not bad. If you drink a whole bottle of vodka. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to get somebody with an informed position from the other side a lot of times.
I put it up there with the topic of guns. There's a fear. There's a fear of the unknown when you don't have the knowledge. And I want to make sure that anybody listening doesn't think that we're saying that people are stupid when you say uneducated. They're just ignorant in the sense that they don't have a background and they don't understand. They haven't done enough research to truly understand the pros and cons and, you know, the health, potential health ramifications that tend to go to the extreme, you know, oh my God, you're going to die, or oh my God, I could, you know, this or that. So I put it up there with the gun argument. When you're informed, then you make an informed decision. And that's what I tell people all the time. Just make sure you look at both sides. You got to weigh it out for yourself.
All right. I'm going to jump forward here, guys. Keep the show rolling. Because this totally relates. We had a question. I didn't know where I wanted to fit it in, but drug muscle, is that a thing? And I asked the guy what he was talking about. The idea that, you know, you take gear and you blow up, but then you come off the gear and it wasn't like real muscle, you know, versus guys that work hard and build a foundation and then are able to maintain it. Is there a difference, I guess, is what he was getting at. Is there a difference between drug muscle and like quote unquote real muscle? Either you guys are welcome to jump in with that.
Take it, Scott.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially certain kind of steroids. I mean, everyone's seen somebody or has been on a cycle and they blow up and, you know, they're like, oh, I gained 30 pounds in 6 months or whatever. And then they go and they come off and cut down and they're 3 pounds over what they were before they started. Because, you know, steroids increase nitrogen retention. So your muscles start retaining more minerals. They start retaining more fluid. They fill out more. But that doesn't mean the muscle's actually growing to that size.
Well, hold on. Let's go to actual muscle. Let's take a guy who's been using gear for 5 years, didn't have a foundation before that. He's been competing. Let's say he's gained a bunch of weight, started out 150 pounds. Now he competes as a light heavyweight in the 190s. So he's stage ready in the 190s. And he's done all this using gear from day one. Is that muscle different than a guy who did it naturally?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Because I was ready to go. We were gonna put the gloves on it.
Man, no.
Yeah, I mean you don't have like a, it's not like a stoplight where you have green is real muscle, yellow is steroid muscle. It's muscle.
Yeah. So that's funny because I had a similar situation come up on Intense Muscle where the guy called it fake muscle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I like where Scott was going. Scott's going more along lines of, you know, water retention and getting bigger, and people sometimes do have this false read of, you know, how much muscle they're putting on because they're getting bigger and they're getting so much stronger and everything else. But I mean, when push comes to shove, muscle tissue is muscle tissue. And I even like it, and I don't want to get off on this tangent, but I have to put this in here. When people say that they can look at someone and tell whether they're on, you know, steroids, and, and I think that's kind of funny too. Muscle is muscle. I mean, it's not gonna, it doesn't change. It just increases, like you said, protein or nitrogen retention, things like, you know, the muscle grows. That's all there is. Muscle grows larger, and that's all there is to it. So there's no, there's no difference.
I'm gonna try to play devil's advocate here then against you guys both, against both Skip and S2H.
Good
so
luck.
So I'm trying. So wait, hold on. So okay, so you stop using the gear, then you can't maintain it. You never knew the foundations to grow that muscle to begin with.
It doesn't matter whether it's from the first day or not.
Okay.
People have different rates that they lose muscle tissue anyway.
Okay.
It could be argued, and I think I see where you're going with this, that those who, you know, don't take as much gear or respond better to low gear, when they stop and they go back on TRT, sure, they probably look closer to what they are on bigger cycles. I'm not one of those guys. I can come off and look like an average fucking guy who doesn't work out. I would be that guy. Maybe I'm just justifying it and defending it.
Yeah.
But the reality is, some lose and some gain quicker than others, and that doesn't have any impact on the fact of whether it's, you know, real muscle or whether it's gear muscle. It would be nice to be able to retain more.
Yeah.
You know, on TRT. Now, I do okay on TRT, but when I come off, it goes.
Yeah.
And it fucking goes quick. Now, I can get it back quick, so it's a double-edged sword there. You know, I get out of shape quick, I can get in shape quick. I lose muscle quick, I can get it back quick. But everybody has a different rate. I don't think that has any impact on whether it's real muscle or not real muscle.
Fair enough. I'll tell you guys what. Victoria pointed this out to me the other day. I am 25 pounds heavier right now than I was a year ago at this time.
Damn.
I know. I feel like I look the same as always. You know what I mean?
No, I should be more clear. You have a spouse or a girlfriend who actually pays attention. Look, I wasn't going with I could gain 50 pounds of muscle and I could be on the Olympia stage and my wife would what the fuck is that?
It's a new relationship, all right?
Yeah.
That's
good
what
for
it is.
You though.
No.
How do you look naked?
I'm pretty good. You want to see? You know, just
yeah, let's see.
Not bad.
Now I can gain 25 pounds in a year and easy. It ain't the right 25 pounds, but I can gain it. I've been getting those. Hey, the gyms are back open.
Yeah.
You know, hints
from your wife. Or from your wife.
So just because I was holding the TV controller under my titty, she, you know, it probably doesn't look too good. So,
all right, we're going to go to commercial break, guys. But before we do, I have a very special shout out to one of our longest time listeners that we've had for the Blood, Sweat, and Gear podcast. He tunes in to most all the live shows. I don't know if he's watching right now. I haven't seen him comment or anything. But shout out to Matt Marshall. It's his birthday.
Oh.
And if you're watching right now, man, I hope you're having a great day. He's a guy he's worked hard, man. First few years of competing, he was 10 pounds heavier each year on stage. Like, I mean, that's a lot, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, he started out pretty light, but, you know, he's progressed up. And now this year he's doing his best to kill it. So I know he's been, and in fact, he's been listening to you guys like long before Blood, Sweat, and Gear was even a thing. He listened to you guys in the PED days.
I mean, let's call a spade here. I don't want to paraphrase, but it sounds like his progress could be related to us.
Directly.
I mean, I think we need some credit there.
Some money. Sure. Send some money, Matt Marshall.
The fact that he listens, though, for that long is very cool and flattering, so that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's a good shout-out right there.
Yes.
And a happy birthday, too.
Yes. Let's get to commercial break. We'll be back in just a minute. Hey, what's up, guys? Scott McDally here, and as I mentioned on the show, I'm about 35 pounds up, maybe 32 pounds up from where I had been a year ago. at this time. And that's because, well, at the time I was dieting a year ago, but now I'm, you know, off season and I've actually tried to grow some muscle, which I haven't tried to push for a little while. So, yeah, I'm taking a little bit of gear, a couple cc's of test, but I'm also, you know, eating harder and I'm back in the gym and I'm training good. And, you know, what I'm doing next is... Hey, what's up, guys? Scott McNally here. And as I mentioned on the programs, I am up about 35 pounds from where I was a year ago right now. So yeah, back then I was dieting. So there is that. But I also, I haven't tried to actually gain muscle for a little while now. I haven't been this heavy since about 2014. And I'm feeling pretty good about it. Plus at the time back then, 2014, I was using a lot more gear than I am to hold this right now. I'm only using 2 cc's of test at the moment. And of course, you know, I'm eating pretty good. I'm not really pushing it crazy yet, and I'm back in the gym. And since I can get back in the gym, I figure the next step that I'm going to make is I'm going to add in some intra-workout carbs. So I just this week ordered a tub of PerryMD. That's the Mountain Dog formulated intra-workout that they have over at TrueNutrition.com. And I, of course, I used my code ADVICES for some additional savings and to, you know, help us out here. If you guys want to purchase anything over there, it'll help our programming out if you use our code ADVICES. They have all sorts of great supplements from PerryMD, which is my personal favorite intra-workout. I also picked up some of their fish oil and I picked up their whole food multivitamins. So it's, you know, stuff that I want plus some stuff that I actually need too, not just like fun bodybuilding supplements. So guys, check them out. Once again, use our code ADVICES, TrueNutrition.com. Also, while I got you here, I want to shout out our other great sponsor, GetAzoth.com. And I've got links to the Amazon if you're in the U.S., and you could go to GetAzoth.com if you're international. I've talked about their new products, which contain Zynomite, and it is a fantastic energy booster, dopamine and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. Plus, they also have Azoth, which is one of the best nootropic blends that are on the market today. Guys, if you want to, as they say, and as Azoth says, get shit done. Azoth is there to help you. It helps to increase your cognitive abilities, you know, increases focus, increases your memory. It just gives you that edge. It's something I use on a regular basis because believe me, I get a lot of shit done every day. We only live once. We only have this one opportunity. Make the most of it. Get stuff done. Get as much as you can done and get the most out of life. That's the way I see Azoth. And I'm glad that they hang with us. Guys, you can use our code ADVICES10 at either the Amazon or at GetAzoth.com. All right, guys, let's get back to the program. All right, guys, welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with Skip and Stage. I'm Scott. And did you like the way I did that? I just changed it all up.
You crazy guy, you.
Yeah, we have some more questions. If you guys have any questions you want to ask, do me a favor. Feel free to post them up here in the live feed. Any topic ideas, anything you've seen that going on that you want to talk about. But before we do, I got to ask Skip about his shot. What's up, man? What happened to you?
Oh. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm pretty good. I'm not a professional bodybuilder, but I'm kind of a pro at shots. Okay?
Yeah,
been doing
steroids.
Them for a long time. Yeah. I'm a professional drug user. I hit a typical ventro, you know, ventro shot, and you know, I like them better than regular glute shots. I've done 25 glute shots my entire life because I just feel like I'm gonna stab my spine or something. I can't really see back there. Yeah, I don't like it. Hmm. So. Plus, there's this giant nerve that anytime I just, you know, I feel like I'm just going to hit my sciatic and start, like, I don't know, maybe have a seizure or something.
Yeah.
But so anyway, I hit, everything was fine, but it was this nagging, you know, and I'm using one of the compounds is DHB. So, you know, things are sore. My side inject, you know, they stay sore for a few days. So I have to be careful to schedule. I won't hit a ventro or a glute shot or a quad shot, you know, prior to legs. I got to have a little bit of time so my leg training isn't impacted, you know, things like that. So there's a little bit of a schedule there that I have to be careful of. And I was fine. And man, it just lingered and it lingered. And I trained legs with no problem. Then I came back and trained legs last night, depleted, right before I was, you know, I started loading when I came home last night for two meals and unload today.
Yeah.
And man, as soon as I started loading, it's just like it turned into a a tennis ball, almost like a, the best I can come up with really is I didn't injure it in the gym, because if I would have injured it in the gym, I would have known that.
Yeah.
Plus it was the second leg session. Now it was tight enough though that I haven't been able to stretch prior to legs, last two leg sessions. So I know there's, you know, something going on there. It's tight, that sort of thing. But when I started loading, the only thing I can come up with really is the added water retention, and especially more so the more depleted I get, you know, the quicker I'm sucking up everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I, you know, start to hold water. I don't know if I had a, you know, a nerve issue, and then the holding of the water really started to either make it spasm or irritate the nerve more from the pressure from the water retention. I don't know, but I was dragging my leg behind me. I didn't even want to walk the kitchen to the kitchen table. I mean, it was just horrible. So naproxen was doing nothing, which is weird. So I switched to ibuprofen. It helped a little bit. The only thing that would help is if I sat down on the couch and had my legs out in front of me. If I was sitting at a high top table or a high top chair or trying to walk, it was just horrible. It's a little bit better today, but I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's it was a spasm. It could have been an injury that I just don't know about, but I just don't think that's the case. I would have felt something, and I felt nothing.
So this is where your injection spot is?
Yeah.
And so how is it, so it's a lump?
Yeah, I mean, probably the size of a, it feels like a tennis ball, but it's more like a golf ball. You know, I may have been a little bit further forward than you. I don't know. The actual injection didn't, there was something with the injection to begin with that irritated something. But when it got bad, you know, after about 7 days, it got bad was last night when I started loading. And I hadn't loaded during the time that it's been bothering me, but I trained legs twice. That's why I'm kind of eliminating the fact that it was training, you know, especially because I didn't train legs heavy yesterday because I was so depleted. But I trained legs heavy 3 or 4 days after with no problem, including squats. So I had, you know, compound movements in there that were glute and hip dominant, maybe not dominant, but it's not like I was just doing hacks or leg extensions or, you know, things like that. So something just wasn't right. So
maybe you got an abscess.
I don't think so, only because I thought about that at first, but I don't think so. It's just the fact that it's so tight. I even wondered this. I wondered if it was tight, and then when I stretched 3 or 4 days ago prior to going on my walk, I may have at that point ended up with a minor pull. But had I done that, I would have felt something in the gym yesterday, and there was nothing. I did more sets than usual because I tend to do more volume work when I'm not depleting, but when I'm more depleted versus when I'm training heavy. When I'm training heavier after load, the volume isn't as high. So I really don't think it was training related. I just think that as I started to suck up the carbs, and of course when you're sucking up carbs when you're depleted, you're pulling water like crazy so fast that sometimes I'll have cramps. I got to be careful to make sure, because you're pulling water so fast that your electrolytes kind of get a little fucked up. But I wasn't cramping or anything else, but I mean it just felt like it was locked up, like just clamped down. Matter of fact, not only did I take ibuprofen, but I took two muscle relaxers too. So today it's better. You know, I'm going to have to be very careful with that. You know, and it's funny because, you know, at 6 weeks out, you start to go, oh, shit. Oh, shit. Everything's been so good. God damn. I had to push these shows. Now I'm going to have to battle around. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. I think I can work around it. But I am a little anxious because, you know, even doing my walks and stuff, I got to be careful not to irritate it.
So I got a question like about an this. Man. One big question. You said you used ibuprofen. What was that other drug you said you used?
Naproxen.
What was it, Skip?
I believe naproxen, yeah.
How did you pronounce that?
I don't know. Maybe it's wrong. I'm not sure.
I just, you had like a little accent on it. I thought it was like maybe a Colorado accent or something.
Oh, I don't know. How do you say it?
I wanted to hear you say it again.
Well, naproxen? Naproxen?
Naproxen.
I say naproxen.
I say oranges. I say Florida, and it drives fucking people crazy.
He raised donkeys when he was a kid, so it's naproxen.
Hey. You also say
put a hot rock pad on your legs, Skip.
I did that. I put a heating pad on it, but with it being knotted up and everything, I wasn't sure if that would actually exacerbate the problem, and I'm thinking maybe I should ice it. But the heat actually did help a little bit. But, I mean, I couldn't sleep on it.
Damn.
It was rough. I mean, it was... It was fucking rough, man.
It's weird, man. I found DHB for me was hit or miss, where I'd been like, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is fine. This is not a problem at all. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I can't walk,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't lift my arm.
That's how it is sometimes with shoulders, too. It's yeah. Like, it'd be smooth. You won't even feel it. But then the next one you do, it's like you, you know, I laugh and say, I don't need Nolitol. I'll just use small doses of, you know, DHB and insulin pens and go that route.
Man.
Which actually, logically, would make sense. You think about it.
All right. We had a virus question. With the virus affecting many things, do y'all, he must be a Southern guy who sent this question in. Do y'all have any info or opinions on this year's show season in regards to them even happening?
I'm hoping to show up in a pro card. None of that was caught because there was this giant long from Scott. So go ahead, Scott. Well,
I think it could be an excuse for Skip not showing up again, but you know, that's burn. A potential. But
burn.
I don't know. I mean, I think the scheduling here. I was talking to a buddy of mine who trains a lot of competitors, and he said that it's, I think, starting in August, September, it's coming back around, but. Something like anything, things have been shifted around times, and I think they're going to reduce. You know how it is. The longer you've had a show, it's kind of like the seniority thing with bodybuilding. So the ones that have been around longer are probably going to have theirs, and the ones that are newer are probably going to get pushed to the side.
That's happening here, kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the bigger shows are still going to be good. I think the smaller shows, you do have a chance to show up where the field is poor. The competition isn't deep, and you know that'll probably be noticed more this year than in past years. But I do think the bigger shows, you know, much like what Scott is saying, the seasoned guys, especially at the Masters level, I'm gonna be honest with you, and I could be wrong. I'm speculating, but I'm being presumptive or both. But I think that the guys in the Masters, especially with me now being over 50. You know, they have more money. They have more resources. A lot of them are still training at home. Yeah. You know, they have setups in home, or they have resources to where they know gym owners. So they've been in and out of gyms, things like that. So I don't think it's going to impact those shows too much in the fall and into the winter. I think that it's going to impact them a little. I don't think there's any way around that. But I do think that the serious competitors, they're still competitors and they're still going to show up. I do think the smaller shows, though, probably are going to be impacted. And I think that the smart promoters who have seen that, they didn't just push the shows. They just canceled them. And they figured they'd come back next year instead of trying. I mean, look, as a promoter, your bottom line, you could say how you're in it for the competitor and everything else, but there are very few promoters who are actually in it more for the competitor than the business component in making money. They have to make money. And if they're not able, and this is what a lot of people don't understand too, is in those states where they're not able to put an audience in the auditorium,
yeah,
they're not going to have those shows. It's far more unlikely that they're going to have those shows because that's the business component.
Yeah.
They're not, if they were doing it for the competitors would be there, but they have to make money. The bottom line is it's a business. And if they can't put people in the seats, or there are these massive restrictions on how many people they can put in the seats, they're better off canceling it and just taking it up next year again.
Well, I'm sure there's people are losing money already that shows had to be canceled or,
oh, and even the bigger ones. Gary Udit is, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but, you know, he had to push Masters Nationals. You know that. But Masters Nationals and North Americans are only 4.5 weeks apart at the same venue. So at least the Masters competitions, they're going to be basically the same. And I would assume that because North Americans is first, it might not be as strong as Masters Nationals. It's the exact same place 4.5 weeks apart.
Let's see if we get there, though. That's my concern. I'm going to, you know what? I can go back and I can pull this clip out. I don't want to say it. There's part of me that feels like this may not happen. You know, but here's the thing. Do I want to go out and say that and then basically, I feel like, is that spreading negativity? You know what I mean?
No, but I think it's just being honest. I mean, if you're just being honest with your voice and your opinion, quit fucking around with whatever you're fucking around
or
with.
Or put your mic on mute. Oh, yeah, he uses the mute button for everything else.
Fucking Jimmy John's. You're pulling out a fucking sub and you wonder why you're not lean. Come on now. Put the damn thing up.
Here's the thought. It may not happen. None of this. I could see, I could go as far as to say I think that the Olympia right now is a 50-50.
No kidding. All right, bold statement. Possible.
No. I'm not going to say that I have any inside information about that. I'm just going to say it's possible. You know? Right. I mean, think about it. Have you? Okay, here's my thought. If the NBA canceled their entire season, if the Olympics are canceled, what makes us think that our little sport, like, of course, our sport is huge to us. We love it. I don't watch other sports. Like, bodybuilding is my NFL. But if that stuff isn't happening, then...
I think that's apples and oranges, and I'll tell you why. Yeah? I could be wrong. Okay. Here's my opinion on it. The NPC and IFBB have a lot more control and aren't pressured politically or by society.
Because nobody knows about them.
Right. And honestly, the people who will be there, they can come or they cannot come.
Yeah.
And they're not as concerned about health and getting make sure that I clarify. They're not as concerned about dying from the coronavirus and being political and, you know, making the statement to where people with the NBA are, you know, they were bitching about how irresponsible it would be and everything else. Yeah. I don't think you're going to get that as much in bodybuilding. And bodybuilding has so much more control over our small little corner of the world than these major, you know, multi-billion dollar, you know, that are on TV dealing with networks.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Corporate sponsorships, things like that. So large corporate sponsorships. So, you know, I tend to think that, my opinion, and I don't mean this as a slam, but I think that the NPC and IFBB are a little bit more selfish from a business component. And I think they would just basically say they'll show up if they want to show up, and most people will show up, and they still want to compete because this is what they live for, and we're going to do it if we can do it.
Mm. I could see that.
But hey, I've been wrong before.
Yeah. I'll say it like this. How about I say this? I'm just going to, we'll be able to cut this out later, you know, for a clip. I'm going to say, I can guarantee you that the Olympia is not happening in 2020. Okay. Now we'll cut that out later and I'll be like, I told you so, all of you.
I'm going with Scott on that one.
You think so?
I mean, so there's no TV revenue hardly for bodybuilding. The Olympia's been on ESPN some here and there, but so they got to make all their money in the stands and their expo and all that stuff. So if they can't draw a crowd, it's not even worth having.
Then what does it look like though in Nevada? Does Nevada have all these restrictions on crowd gatherings and masks and social distancing, or is this one of the states that is a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say lax, but a little bit more like the Texases and the Floridas, or is it more like the New York and the California? I think it's going to come down to that, because if people can get there and they're allowed to be there, I think people will go. Yeah. There are too many people who, this is just incredible. You know, the other part about the NBA and your major sports is there's tons and tons of games, but there's one big dance at the Olympia, and it's so important to a lot of people to be such a part of that, and it's such a building anticipatory type thing where I'm going to get together with my friends, I'm going to get drunk as shit, and I would tend to think that Sin City probably doesn't have the restrictions that other states do, because they would basically destroy their economy. And if I'm not mistaken, I remember there being talk in the media about how other states didn't like that Nevada wasn't being as restrictive when the virus actually hit. Whether that came around or not, I don't know. I was focused on Florida. I wasn't focused on anybody but myself.
Yeah. I know that I heard the casinos had opened back up. So, but, and if you think about it too, like, money is power in those casinos, obviously. I mean, they make a lot of money, so they could, I have to imagine that there is some weight there, you know, as far as like making things happen.
Sure.
Well, they probably control the politics there in the state and in the city and everything. You know, that's pretty obvious.
I would guess.
I would imagine they have their hand in federal politics as well.
Yeah.
I would think that because there's so much money, they probably have a little bit more pull than most places. But I don't know. I think it comes down to the state, personally.
I've seen Casino. I know how the things run out there. Have you guys been to Vegas before?
Yeah. I have not.
Man, it is such a cool town. It's a great place to visit. We could kind of consider moving there, Victoria and I. We both liked it. We like the weather. We like the warm weather. It'd be a nice place to spend winter.
Yeah, I've got warm weather down here.
All right. Dry, warm weather. I can't stand the humidity. I would die in Florida. Wow.
There's no humidity here.
No?
No. It's like 90% today.
It's what?
90%.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So we got one for Skip on skip loading. We can make it more generic if you want. We can just say loading. When you skip load, do you use Humalog? And what's the dosing and protocol?
No. I have, but I don't use it.
No?
And the reason that I don't use it is you're just so insulin sensitive at that point if you're depleted that I really haven't found a big benefit to doing that.
Yeah.
It can help in the off season if you're trying to push. But again, then you're going to sit on that fence of whether it's going to help to fatten you up. Versus, so it comes down to, you know, how genetically gifted you are. And if you're predisposed, you know, as far as a somatotype, if you're an endo, then it's probably not a great idea. If you're a mesoect, then it might work a little bit better. But I'm just not huge on insulin. I have some guys who use it.
Yeah.
I've used it in the past, but I didn't see enough of a response and enough of a positive outcome to continue to use it.
Okay. Any thoughts on loading with insulin, Scott?
I know I'd probably say the same thing he said. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think when you're doing a kind of diet similar to what he does, and you're depleting down everything, I don't really see where it's. It's really that necessary, but more in the off season. But kind of depends on the person too. You know.
Yeah.
But I kind of would go the way he's saying, pretty much the same.
I tend to be very ectomorphic in that I've made really good benefit out of insulin as far as like filling out goes. Once again, 35 pounds up from last year at this time. I don't know if I said 30 before, it's 35 pounds. But I haven't touched insulin. And here's one of my thoughts. I've, you know, used it a couple times in the last few months, so I guess that's not true. I can't say I haven't touched it, but it's not part of my programming. You know what I noticed? I feel like I have a harder time eating my food when I feel like it goes to my stomach, and I definitely get distension from it, and I feel like it slows down my gastric emptying, and that I'm less hungry than...
Really?
Yeah, once I get it in my system.
It does the opposite.
For does me it really?
For most. Oh yeah, and that's part of the problem too. Is, you know, I don't post all the food that I eat on my loads, and the main reason is because there's just a ton of it. I'm really at the point where the more I eat, the leaner I get.
Nice.
And I think that people, I think some people would see it as reckless. To be honest with you.
With the amount of food you put down?
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny because I already deal with enough with skip loading anyway. It's not like I'm not, you know, being transparent. It's just that I don't put every single thing out there because it really, I think, would make some people think, oh, my God, like how in the, like that's just not even possible.
Yeah.
So I am miserable when I load. I really get to the point where other than the first meal or two, I don't like it. I get anxious coming up to it and approaching it, and I just don't enjoy it at all. You know, people think, oh, you get whatever. It's not like that. Well, it is for about a meal. Point is if I were to use insulin, all it would do is cause the food to move through me even quicker, and I'd be able to get even more food down. So, like, holy shit. Would it be better? I mean, it could if I could continue to get, you know, leaner and I would continue to throw gas on a fire. But it's just working so well that it's throwing in another variable that I just don't need and could throw things off. As an example, if I'm so insulin sensitive now, if I start throwing in insulin, maybe I would not be as insulin sensitive.
True.
You know, so I don't want to fuck around with, and then it becomes, do I use it every time I load? Do I have to be careful so that I only use it every second or third? Well, then you're talking about consistency of variables. And I'm a very consistent, I look for patterns in everything. My clients will tell you it's patterns. Always look for the patterns.
Yeah.
They're always there. You may not see them. It'll take time, but there are always patterns.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like too. Somebody asked us on one of the other shows about using insulin for carving up, and I mean, like you're not a small guy by any means. That, you know, if you're 210 pounds, did you say right now?
Yeah, but that's not. I mean,
but yeah, but when I guess
204.
So 210. I mean, you're not a small guy by any means, but like by the scales of bodybuilding, I feel like we could still fill you out. Like, we don't, it's not like you're Ronnie size. We're like, oh man, we're going to need this. You know what I mean? It's like, so if you can fill out, then I feel like a lot of us, a lot of guys listening to this show could fill out without it. It's not like we need it, you know, in order to really maximize. Right. So,
and I think that's where it comes down to the off season. I think it'd be more beneficial in the off season, but when you do it in the off season, people need to be reminded of this. Your nutrition in your off season, if you're going to use insulin as effectively as possible, really needs to be approached much like a prep, in the sense that it needs to be incredibly structured, and it needs to be approached with the timing and the analysis and the assessment of a prep. And if you're not willing to do that, just throwing insulin on top of an off season, I don't want to say binge fest, but force feed, is just a really, really bad idea. And some people would say, well, if you're genetically gifted, you'll grow anyway, so throw it in there. If you're genetically gifted, you're going to grow no matter what. Yeah. So I don't know that, you know, because you're genetically gifted, that throwing insulin is in there is going to make any, you know, significant impact or your progress that much better on someone who's already progressing very well anyway.
Yeah, I could see
that. And I think that's where insulin gets used a lot is, and I've done it, you know, just crappy diet, and you just, hey, I'm going to take some Humalog for meal number five of ice cream and shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then the insulin made him fat.
Yeah.
All I did was get fat on insulin. Well, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. You're just eating. But there's a lot of people with that mentality, and I'm not beating them up. But at the same time, really, if you approach, and I understand this sounds like a blanket statement, but I'm comfortable making it. If you approach your off season as it's just forcing food, and you're, and there really isn't this very detailed structure with assessment and everything, you're not going at it the most optimal way. That it's just not the best way to do it. And it'll work. It'll work for a while, but it's not going to continue to work.
I've heard people, speaking of off seasons, I've heard people say that, you know, okay, so back when we all came up, a lot of the idea was you had to eat, you know, six times a day. And I've heard even John Meadows say, you know, that you don't need to eat as many times. It's more about like the total amount of food that you're getting. I've kind of been experimenting with that. This isn't a question. I'm just telling you guys. I've been experimenting with that a little bit. I'm only eating, well, I have a shake, but then I have four meals. I'm not doing like six meals a day, you know, anything like that. Like I used to. I used to do six, seven, have it all split up, timed out. But now I'm just doing four meals a day. And, you know,
like, well, but you're doing five if you got a shake in there. I mean, I'm not trying to nitpick.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Not much difference. I mean, going from five to six or six to seven, I don't know if that's that big of a difference, but it's tough, I think, with John. John isn't just coming from the fact, like, his own particular situation, because the guy really can't eat, you know, he ain't putting away a lot of food. So he's going, you know, he goes off of what his clients, and he has his clients do too. So I don't know that I disagree with that. I think sometimes, and it's okay to do this, but I think sometimes we discuss things that are, that can be done a myriad of different ways.
Okay.
That'll still be very effective, to the point where it's much like GH timing. I'll just make the comparison. If things are going to work at, you know, four meals versus five, and, you know, GH timing at this time versus time, sometimes those things you can't quantify.
Okay.
Really what the progress would be. You could say, well, I ran three meals for 6 months this time and I grew this much, and I ran seven meals this time and they were the same calories, so I grew more. You can't do that because there's other variables in there that you're not accounting for. There's too many different variables. I think it's too difficult in situations like this to just quantify. I think it comes down to, especially with food, it just comes down to digestion and whether you're progressing and whether it be growing or, you know, whatever your goals are at that time. But, you know, some people are different. I just think that something like the frequent meals has been around for so long that it's not ineffective. It's just maybe not as practical for some people as is. And I'll go so far as to say this, and I'll leave it alone. A lot of people who only function or like to function on the intermittent fasting are doing it for no other reason than they're, and I know someone's going to take offense to this, but I guess it is what it is. They're lazy when it comes to eating. It's easier to not eat as frequently. And it's just more like it. They always say, well, it fits better and it's easier to do. Well, so is driving through McDonald's, but that's not going to be the most. We don't gauge how optimal or how effective something is by how easy it is.
Wait, so should I not be going to McDonald's for one of those four meals a day?
You're an ecto. Oh, you can get away with it.
Okay, good.
If I was an ecto, I would go to McDonald's
too. Every damn day.
McFlurries.
We got one here in email. DM over at Facebook. Hey, Scott, here's a question for the shows. I can open my right side lat with no issues, having issues opening the left side. Any ideas why this would happen?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. Yep. What do you say? Me first? Hey. I think your neighbor just came to Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
On the road here. Anyway, he can't find you, so he's like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna go get Skip, drive by his house, and terrorize." I think when it I lost it.
Lat, opening your lat.
Yeah, thank you. Trigger point. I had this problem actually.
Yeah, I have too.
Not only trigger point, but even. What's called scaling shoulders. You ever see somebody from the rear, and you'll get this a lot with clients, and you have to really pay attention to it. One shoulder is higher or lower than the other.
Yes.
It's called scaling shoulders. And it's important that when you're dealing with your clients, when they're posing in progress pictures, to pay attention to things like that, because it will potentially not ruin, but it'll go against their symmetry. And if you have one shoulder higher or lower than the other, then you're going to have a lat that could potentially open more than the other. I don't know that any judge looks at a state show or regional show and goes, oh, the one lat opens slightly more than the other. But all things being equal, we work too hard, spend too much time, too much money. We want perfection. We want everything to be, you know, as good as possible. So I was dealing with a trigger point. And I had some work done by a physical doctor of physical therapy, one of my friends, Petros, who's awesome. I'd have to drive up to Jupiter, which is what Scott and I were talking about.
Petros Frios, or what was his name?
Yeah, Fragus Kakis.
Fragus Kakis, that's right. Yeah, I like saying his name.
Yep. But he helped quite a bit. And I've always had this problem where the one side, but I also was diagnosed with scaling shoulders when I was 20, 22 or something like that, because I have a different cut to one pec than the other. My minor shows a little bit more on the right than the left. And I remember being despondent going, oh my God, I'm never going to win the Olympia.
Yeah.
Sitting in the gym. And I'm just being honest when I say this, it sounds kind of pathetic now and I kind of laugh, but you know, there was a time when I was a teenager that, you know, I was sitting in the gym, like crying my eyes out after the lights were turned off at the Y Center, going, you know, I can't believe that I have to deal with this. I just want to be the best bodybuilder, you know.
Yeah,
that sort of
shit. Yeah.
And I knew it was out of my control, and like that was going to fuck everything up, and I wasn't going to be able to do it. So it's just funny how sometimes we focus on things that we don't have any control over.
Yeah.
Answer the question.
You can't do that. Ooh. So I did. It comes down to trigger point. And so when I worked on that, when he worked on the trigger point on that side, it was basically like nerves not allowing that muscle to open up as much. And it's also an activation issue. Like what I also found was over the years, I have to be very careful when I start my back training that I'm very, very light. And I don't look at them as warm-up sets. I look at them as activating both lats and both sides of my back equally instead of just warming up.
Because
there are times where if I don't warm up enough or activate, I'll get into my heavier sets and I don't feel the work on the left side of my back as much. It's not much different, but if you're really in tune with your body, you can tell the difference, and I could always tell the difference. So that was one thing that helped tremendously, because then the work felt even left to right.
So he's talking about activating his lats while lifting or posing.
You know what? I guess he doesn't make it say a difference between the two.
Yeah.
And he said it's his left lat.
I think so. Yeah.
So he's right-handed probably.
But it still comes down to the activation and nerve, right?
Let me just give you a couple things here. One is, so a lot of people that are right-handed, like 85% of the world's right-handed. So that's why I'm gonna assume he's right-handed. So when he does a lat spread, I guarantee you his left thumb is lower down on his lat than his right. because most people that are right-handed, whatever hand you are when you do a lat spread, you're going to put your right hand, that your strong hand, up higher. Huh. And then also when he lifts, he needs to do a lot more stuff. If you do, let's say, lat pull downs and you're right-handed, you're going to pull with your right arm and your right lat more. So, he, you know, it could be a grip strength issue where he has a better grip strength in his right hand and he puts more into his right lat so he can wrap to help that, or go with just isolated, you know, single rows, but also concentrate on the form, because people that are in their weak side hand tend to roll their forearm more with single, you know, the dumbbell rows or whatever. And I bet you that's what it is.
Hmm. It's funny you say that, because one of the things, one of the major changes I made to my back training when I was trying to really focus on the activation and focus on having the workload be equal on both sides, as I would do, I started doing my back workouts a little bit more isolateral work, where it would go left, right, left, right. I don't like doing all on one side then all on the other, because then your weak side tends to, it's not the same. I don't think the workload is the same, but if you go left, right, left, right, left, right, then it's pretty well balanced as far as the workload. And you can go to failure without coming up two reps short or something like that. So that's a good, that's actually a good point, one that I didn't even think about, but that was a major change to my back training when I started noticing that, those problems.
Yeah. I mean, if he's going to pose, like do front lat spreads, just consciously, after he puts his thumbs back there, see if his left thumb is not lower down the lat than his right one.
Yeah, I remember one of my lats wasn't opening up as much, and initially I thought it was a developmental issue. And this was right when I met VJ. Like, I was maybe, I think when I first met him, I was maybe 6 or 8 weeks out from a show. And we met in the gym. We started talking, became friends. We started doing cardio. Like, we'd train at the same time. And then we'd start doing cardio, you know, afterward, talking the whole time, you know, just doing like low, slow, steady state. And, you know, he's a chiropractor, and we got to talking about it, and he did ART on me, and it helped. Like, the something was sticking. I thought initially, I was like, oh, my lat didn't develop as much. This is years ago, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, for some reason, that muscle is smaller than this muscle. But in actuality, it was. He told me it was like in a contracted state, basically.
Right.
It was like there constantly spasming, you know? Uh-huh. And for that reason, it was being held back. And he would work on it, and it popped back out. But then after a few days, it would start retracting again, you know? And so it was a matter of like continually getting that to work. And he helped me get into the show with better symmetry. You know, it definitely was something that wasn't fixed. After, I've seen that a lot, too. I feel like I see that very often with people.
Well,
in
no
their
one's
backs.
Truly balanced left to right.
Yeah.
Even the problem is you don't see it as much with arms and delts because they're not right next to each other.
Okay.
It's more
noticeable
when it comes to pecs, lats, middle rhomboids,
glutes,
like
glutes,
that.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Let me see what else we got here. We had a couple things that were just kind of fun questions. Who were your mentors? And this is for Skip, Scott, and Scott. Best mentors or influences early on. We could probably do like a whole show on this. I'll start with you, Scott. Give me one of your early mentors and why.
Well, I mean, I think the mentors early on were more limited because there wasn't the internet, but I was a big Dan Duchesne fan.
Really? I could see that.
Underground books and stuff. And then a guy named Johnny West from Houston Gym, that was my wife's coach and mine. And I probably learned more from him than anybody else.
Johnny West. Sounds like a gunslinger from Texas. Johnny West from Texas.
Yeah. Got six shooters on his side.
How about you, Skip?
He's a solid dude.
Mine are real easy. Hans van der Granen when I was younger. You know Hans.
Yeah.
Because he was like a fucking little badass powerhouse.
Yeah, he
was. That's back all the way back to like junior nationals and shit like that when he was just getting to the point where he's kicking people's ass at the, you know, he was young. He's probably only in his early to mid 20s, if that.
My first contest, he was a judge. And middleweight was a split decision. I lost it by 1 point. Hans had voted for me, so I
so
like
he's
him.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. Yeah, yeah.
The other one was Zilla. No question. From an online standpoint, he went by the handle Zilla. He was on Anaboxy. I think Scott, you know, that name rings a bell, right?
I know you're talking about.
Yeah. He he's the one that actually introduced me to shitloading, and he kind of took me under his wing. And I really, I don't know that I owe anybody as much credit for being as supportive of me and really helping me out when they did not need to, completely selflessly. And he gave me business advice early on when there weren't a lot of people. Not only were there not a lot of online trainers, but there was not very many people actually making a living. It was just kind of a side hustle for gear money and that sort of thing. And he really selflessly helped me more than anybody ever in my 35 years of bodybuilding. No question. I've always wanted to meet him. Just to thank him. And I thank him and give him credit every opportunity I can, because he had no reason to help me. Zero.
You told that story on another podcast with the Excellence Cartel. You talked about your history. And yeah, I remember because I listened to that. Do you still talk to him ever?
I don't. I know he's around.
Yeah.
He's one of those stealthy motherfuckers that, you know, and I would never know what he looks like because he comes from the old
school
days. Yeah. Well, you know, he wasn't going to post any pictures of his face, and he'd be standing next to me and I wouldn't know who he is. The only thing I know about him is he was a competitor, and he was a very good competitor. He worked in a plant doing something, whether he was a plant supervisor or something. So he had a job outside of bodybuilding, and he was a smaller like weight class, like maybe he was like a bantam like that.
Okay. Yeah.
But he's the one who I can't say enough, because but you know what, that's how it used to be. People were so much more helpful back then. It's like when you used to go into a gym and you'd go and ask the big guy about something, or the big guy would give you a tip on something. You didn't sit there and go, well, my bro said this, or whatever, I read on the internet. You just listened, and
you're grateful. Were
really thankful that somebody gave you a fucking tidbit of information to walk away with.
Yeah.
Obviously that doesn't happen anymore. Fuck me. I mean, those days are gone, but those two easily. I don't even know if I can, and I don't want to, offend anybody. I don't know if there's anybody else that I could even, put in it close to those two.
Okay. Right on. I would say, who I learned a lot from early on was listening to Dave Palumbo's podcasts. Like early on, because I started reading, all the message boards, and then I started listening to Dave, and Dave used to do like real educational stuff. In fact, he was an inspiration for me to do the podcasts we do. And I feel like, Dave doesn't do as much of the informational stuff as he used to. He does more, entertainment and more interviews. And, we try to do that stuff too. But, we try to do shows like these where we try to add some education. And that's like kind of our main focus. And it's not to say he doesn't, but at the time he was really focused on that. So I got a lot from Dave. And then meeting my first coach, Rick Wetmore, he was another guy. He had no reason to help me. And it was funny because I posted up that I wanted to compete on a message board. And I was talking about, this is what I wanted to do. I think I asked a question and he posted up, and I think I said something about wanting to do him. I had a question about posing, and I said is this what we do? Something for Michigan shows. And he's like, where are you? He commented back. He's like, where are you at in Michigan? And I was like, told him, and he was like, I'm in Michigan too. I'm in the same area. He was like, if you want, come on up to Farmington Hills Powerhouse, get a workout in with me. And he was like, and I'll help set you up on a diet. I was like, okay. So, and then I thought to myself, I was like, okay, so I'm going to go to a gym that I've never been to. I'm going to meet a guy in person that I met off the internet. And then I'm going to go in the locker room and take off all my clothes.
Okay. Carry a gun.
Yeah. Seems legit.
What could go wrong with this? But then I did it, and he ended up being my coach. He coached me for free all the way up to that show. He didn't charge me anything. And, I think he was experimenting with people. He was trying to help educate people. But I guess he took a shine to me too or something. And he's still a good friend of mine. He's still a good friend of mine today. But he taught me, what it was that was different you learn so much. And even like the stuff that Dave had said, Dave would say one thing on the shows, and this isn't knocking him at all, but then in the real world, actually applying that to people, it didn't look exactly the way it did on paper is what it comes right. down to, you know? And so getting to see like those real world applications, it's something that's just different. It's just different. It's something that we can't relay to you on a podcast unless we were right in the trenches with you. Then you would see it, us applying it to your life. And then things that are on paper that are kind of formulaic would then would make sense in an individual basis. We say it all the time, right? Like, you know, we can give you some basic gists, but to really work with you one-on-one is a total different thing. So,
but maybe that's what Dave was doing in his defense. I mean, it may have been that was the best answer for the large majority of people, but that didn't what you needed specifically, you know, if you were working with him.
Oh, so. Yeah. And that's what I mean by it is like, but to learn that, though, like it took seeing it applied to me to see like what the difference was. You know what I mean? So anyway, I thought that was a good question. Let's see. I think we had one more. Where was this one? Oh, yeah. Okay. If you could go back in time, what's one thing that you would have done different?
Oh God!
Like one? Different everything, or
do we want to like? Do we want to make it like bodybuilding focused?
Okay.
Probably, let's make it.
That'd probably be a good idea.
Being the show is bodybuilding park. Yeah, that makes sense.
Skip, go first because I got.
I know, right? I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, take it, Scott. One thing I would do different. Actually, this one's kind of easy. When I started, I was walking uphill to school both ways through five snow and with no shoes. Now, it was so long ago that the only information we really had was from the muscle magazines. And it's important to note that everybody in the muscle magazines was ripped. They didn't want to take pictures when they were ripped. So I, throughout my high school days, while I was trying to, you know, gain muscle and everything, you know, I was constantly on this caloric restriction and keeping my calories too low. Had I just really ate and took advantage of my teenage metabolism and not necessarily forced food, but really ate to grow, I think I would have really made a lot of progress sooner when I was younger and been like a bigger teenager than I was. It really took me. I mean, it's funny because, and everybody knows this picture, but it's true, so I have to say it was when I saw the picture of Lee Priest eating that bucket of chicken.
Yeah.
I thought, the fuck is he doing? What the? Oh, shit. They actually aren't like this all the time. I had no idea. Huh. I thought they were shredded. People were shredded all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's why I give clients a break sometimes when they, because sometimes you get a client, they'll be like, you know, I just want to get shredded and they're only, you know, 200 pounds and their body fat is, you know, 15%. And they need to gain muscle. So, but I can understand where they're coming from instead of being, you know, like, oh, my God, this is silly. You know, what are you talking about? And, you know, kind of talking down to them. You have to understand that I had that same mentality when I started out. And I think that it's not very appealing. The reality of our sport is not very appealing in the sense that to gain true muscle, you're not going to be really, really lean. You don't have to get necessarily fat as fuck.
Yeah.
Like Lee Priest eating a bucket of chicken, like we used to do back in the old days where you just got fat as shit. And I think that's very dangerous and it doesn't help with your health at all. I don't think that's necessary. At the same time, though, you got to feed growth. And had I done that when I was younger, I think I would have, I don't think I'd be better off today.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I would have gotten more size quicker in the beginning if I would have taken advantage of that, those teenage hormones and, you know, that teenage passion where you're going to win the Olympia by the time you're 26. You know, you've got the timeline already figured out and that sort of thing. So that's easily my number one. I'm sure there's more, but that's definitely number one.
How about you, Scott?
You know, I'd probably say it's something I still, to this day, is I wish I'd have been more consistent, you know, overall, like not going and training for a couple of years and taking a little time off. Mm. I mean, there's one break I took like 4 years or, you know, hitting it hard for a couple of months, then kind of half-assing it for a couple of months. So I would just say consistency would have paid off.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
but you know what? That's easy to say when we're older too, because life and kids and career and family, you know, all the things that play into, you're going to have those times. I know I certainly have regrets and things that I would do differently outside of just that one thing, but
I don't think it was out of my control to be consistent.
Right, exactly.
It wasn't out of my control to be consistent. I've always had a consistency problem. You know, I'll get going on it and then it just kind of, I'm not even saying just going to the gym. I mean, just sometimes you would go through these spells where I just go kind of get a pump, you know, but I'm talking for like 6 months, you know, and then I get back after it hard. So consistency.
You know, is the opposite of that is Shelby Starnes. Like, he is one of the most consistent people, that I've ever met. Like, he decided, you know, that he wanted to be the best he could at bodybuilding, because it sounds good on paper. Like, okay, I'm going to eat like the most food that my body can handle to continue growing, you know, from the moment I go into off season until the moment that I start, you know, my contest diet. And then I'm going to follow my contest diet to a T and get as shredded as I possibly can be, you know, to do my best. And then I'm going to go back to, it's like, he was so consistent in it, like a robotic way, seeing him do that, you know, having known him, like watching him do that. Like, it was something that inspired me. Like, I was in awe. I wouldn't even say inspired, but I was like in awe of, even before I became friends with him. But he was definitely very unique in that way, like just how greatly consistent he could be. And I guess, you know what, it made a lot of, it worked for him, you know, because
paid off.
Yeah. I mean, he was able to take a physique that, like, he didn't have the best of genetics, you know, and he was able to turn pro with that and be competitive as he could be, you know what I mean? As a pro. I don't know. I just thought of that. If there's one thing I would change, there's more than one. I'm lucky that when I came to bodybuilding in a serious way, I grew up knowing about it. I grew up around it. I tried it when I was a kid. Then I went, got into other stuff, got into art. And then, and when I got serious about it, I was lucky that I had already had like a life passion, photography and art, that I burnt myself out on. So I kind of had some insight about like keeping a passion in my life, you know, so like for the consistency and stuff like that, I made a commitment and I've stuck with it since I made that decision. But one thing that I think I was a real big kick in the pants was so when I made that decision with art and stuff, I moved back to Michigan, career-wise, I was deflated. I didn't have like any goals. I'm like, well, what am I going to do now? This is what my life was supposed to be. Right. So I took a blue collar job and I started working it. And like, you know, I started getting into bodybuilding, and though they were two separate things, bodybuilding was a hobby, which obviously is always a hobby for me. I've, you know, found a way to make money with it now, but I didn't do a job. I ended up getting a job working very hard physically, and that affected my ability to grow when I was able to eat more. I'm doing good, right? I'm, like I said, I'm, you know, 225-ish. I could push to 230 without doing a lot more work, but I'm 43 now. When I was 33, had I been doing that, like, and had I been in a position where I wasn't burning all my food up, you know, I stressed my digestion so much by eating so much just to keep up with my needs. Like, I was at one point eating like McDonald's every day, and I took a bunch of insulin, and I still had abs. Like, I couldn't get fat if I wanted to. It's thousands and thousands of calories, and I was doing a shitty job that I didn't care about. It's not like I was like doing a career and this is what I love and I'm going to stick with this. I was just trying to get by. I was just trying to make money and like find my way in my life, you know? It's, I could have done anything. And honestly, I made a really poor decision. If I had to take a shitty job, I made a poor decision in taking one that was not good for bodybuilding.
No, but you know what? Listen, I got to throw this in because I think it's important. Shelby isn't wrong and you're not wrong. It's how you guys dealt with these situations is just based on what was important to you and what your passion was at the time and what you felt like you had to get done. As an example, Shelby, it could be said, and I don't know him well enough on a personal level, maybe, because he was able to accomplish what he did. And he is a robot. He's one of the most disciplined people that I know of in the sport.
Yeah.
At the same time, does he have any regrets as far as what did he miss out on other things in retrospect, whether it be relationships or family or anything else? And maybe he doesn't. That's okay.
Yeah.
But I wonder things like that. Your situation, you were trying to make do. You did what you had to do. And sometimes you're going to get sidetracked. I mean, I would almost go to the point of saying, if I went for 35 years of my training and it was the only thing that mattered to me, I would look at myself and go, that's a little fucked up, because there would be a lack of balance there. It doesn't mean that, you know,
for 35 full years. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, there were times I didn't take too much time off, but I had a couple years off, and outside of getting burned out, I didn't have much more time than that, but I'd take a week or two there or here. You know, if we, you know, you have kids, you have family, there are things that come up, but the point is there still has to be, there should be some balance too. So I don't know that your situation was wrong. Shelby's situation is wrong. Mine's wrong. Scott's is wrong. It's just what happens to fit our situation.
But
throughout things that have come up.
I mean something different, though. What I mean is I understand this about my job situation in hindsight. Right. At the time, I didn't know that I didn't realize how greatly it was affecting me. Like, if you were to have laid it out for me and you're like, the number one thing that's keeping you from becoming a heavyweight bodybuilder, Scott, is that you're burning up too many calories at work, plus you're injuring yourself, and I have shoulder issues from that job for doing it for 5 years and stuff. It's like, you know, if I could do it again, that is one thing I would change. It's not like, oh, I regret it. You know, like in that, like, it wasn't, I just didn't know. I just didn't know any better. And I see that. And, you know, I guess all I'm saying is like, if you have a good job that you love, if I were trying to turn this into advice for any of our younger listeners, if you have a good job that you love and it happens to be real physical, then yes, you know, maybe you aren't going to be able to, you know, then make it work for you. But if you have a shitty job that you don't like and it's compromising your bodybuilding and you love bodybuilding, then find a different shitty job. Right. You know, right. I guess that was all I thought.
That,
you know,
pays more.
Yeah, exactly. Less shitty.
Or pays the same and is less shitty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's what I eventually tried to do here. And thus brings us to the lucrative world of podcasting. I got another one here. Mass moves. Wait, what is it? Mass moves mass, something like that. Let's see. What was that?
Oh, weight moves weight.
Yeah. Is the weight moves weight? Ooh, low battery. Is the weight moves weight theory realistic in powerlifting for getting bigger lifts? Scott, this has got your name all over it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there's like a couple reasons behind this, but I think there's some, it goes to football too, because, you know, like O-line coaches want their linemen to weigh more because it's harder for someone to move more weight and they can move more weight with it. But I don't think that's exactly the same as powerlifting. You know, I agree with it, but then I have a problem with it because, yeah, you take guys that are in bigger weight classes, they weigh more.
Yeah.
And they lift more generally.
Yeah.
But then you get a guy like Dan Green, who wasn't, I mean, he's a big guy, but from a powerlifting standpoint, was not a super heavyweight. And he was lifting as much as the guys in, you know, above him in another class or two classes. So I think if you just take it on a straight, let's say that Skip and I can lift, we have the exact same strength at 200 pounds. Does that mean when I go to 250, I'm going to be stronger than him, no matter what the 250 is? I think in some lifts it does matter, you know, especially like the deadlift, you know, where you've got more upper body weight, you know, and you actually move a little more weight that way. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to say, because if you got a guy that's 300 pounds, it's 6'4", and you got a guy that's, 6 foot and he's 250, I don't know if it really means that, you know, okay, say the guy at 250 pulls 800 and the guy at 300 pulls 825. Well, is that a real relevant ratio compared to their weight? I don't know. I think you'd have to do like a lot of deep research on it to see how much a guy weighs and how much more he is pulling, you know?
But comparing two people who are at different heights is difficult to do. I think it'd be more accurate to say if the guy is 6 foot and he's, like you say, 225 pounds versus 245 pounds, is it more likely that he's going to push more weight? I think it's more likely. It's not necessarily an absolute. Because I don't have a powerlifting background, but from my situation, I know that in my off season, I was a little bit more insulin resistant, where I had gotten to the point where pushing food and pushing my weight up was starting to slowly erode my strength and my growth. And then as I come into a cut phase, then I start to increase the insulin sensitivity. I not only get the strength back, but I'm as strong now as I was at 236. Hmm. So I'm not talking about powerlifting, but I'm still talking about the strength. There's a lot of variables there. I don't like cliche blanket statements like that. So I would rather say that it's less true than it's true, because there's too many other variables. I just think it's too vague, and I don't think that relying on something that vague as a rule to, like, as an example, if he takes this rule, what's he going to do? He's going to gain weight. So thinking I'm going to get stronger this way, and I don't know that that's the case. There are people who can come down, as an example, competing in powerlifting, they come down to the next weight class lower. If they know what they're doing, they can hang on to a lot of their strength, if not all of it, and compete more successfully at the lower weight class. So there's that component too.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at what Mario Pudzianowski won, the world's strongest man, like what, 5, 6 times, 7, whatever it was. And he was easily weight wise and height, one of the smaller guys that competed in those years. Yeah, he was pretty ripped. You know, he looked more like a bodybuilder, but I mean, I don't think he weighed like, he was like probably close to 300, and he was, I think he's like 6'1 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, he's competing against dudes that are like 6'8, 400 pounds. So, mm-hmm. You know, genetics have a lot to do with it. I mean, lifting, some people are just stronger the way they're built ergonomically, but I think the point would be is this: if I could lift X amount right now and I went and ate like shit and gained 50 pounds at the end of the year, would I really lift anymore? Probably not.
I think that's a good point. And I also think it cuts to the fact that why power lifters are, as a group, significantly leaner now than they were 20, 25 years ago. I think they were behind the curve nutritionally. And I think that they were in that mentality of weight moves weight and other similar cliches. And I think that because they were slow to come around, now they're coming around and they are leaner. And they're putting up better numbers than they were 20, 25 years ago as well. So doesn't mean that there's not still records there that haven't, you know, that may not be broken. But the point is I think as a group, they would not be leaner if it wasn't somehow to their benefit. And I don't think they're going to give up the numbers just for health. I don't think the powerlifting community all of a sudden went, we want to be healthy.
Yeah.
Didn't happen any more so than bodybuilders. Matter of fact, I think that if you think about it, that's probably why bodybuilders have done the same thing too, because they have also understood that you don't have to be a fat fuck to gain, you know, to make optimal progress and gain as much, you know, muscle mass as possible. When I say fat fuck, I mean fat sloppy. Yeah. Obviously, you have to carry a little bit higher body fat level. You're not going to stay shredded all the time. I get that, and I don't want to give that implication to anybody, but I think that has come around. You know, condition now in the off season is completely different than it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Hey, I got a question I'll ask you guys. So this is my selfish moment of the day, because I want to hear your opinions on this. So it also allows me to brag. So I posted a video yesterday or the day before. My last back day, I rode the 150-pound dumbbell for 11 reps. That was the heaviest weight I've moved since the quarantine happened. I also did a couple other moves that, like, I did my normal workout. I trained hard. I really did. Like, I busted ass just as much as I would any other workout, covered in sweat by the time I was done. That was the heaviest weight I've moved. My back, I didn't think about it till just now, this conversation about weight moves weight. My back is not, it didn't get sore at all. Did it have to get sore? Because we equate, so here's what I'm going to get at. We equate getting sore with having had a good workout. But then listening to the podcast and learning more over the years, I found that that doesn't have to happen. You don't necessarily have to. But something's telling me now, man, I'm like, well, why didn't I get sore? I moved all this weight, but was it not a good workout?
A lot of variables there. I will say that you don't have to necessarily be sore. Like if you're ridiculously sore, that doesn't mean that, you know, the workout was any more productive. It just means that whatever movements you were doing or what you were doing, your body wasn't as accustomed to. So it has the potential to be better for progress. But, you know, there are also muscle groups where that rarely get sore for certain people. And yet sometimes they can be their dominant body part. So
back gets sore for me, like a quarantine workouts, you know, doing crazy stuff and at home as hard as I could train. I've gotten, you know, my back will get sore. My lats will get sore. I didn't feel this. There's no soreness.
Yeah, my arms are arguably my best body part, and they don't get sore very often. So, I don't know. I don't think there's a direct. I will agree with you though that we all want to wake up the next day and at least be tight, and maybe not crippled sore, but like if you contract your chest, you want to feel okay.
Yeah,
you know, it's there. I did it. I killed it. You know, that sort of thing. Mm. But I was just telling my wife when I was complaining about my hip, I'm like, God, my legs haven't been sore in like 5 weeks. Huh. And then all of a sudden they're sore today for more of a depletion workout. So it sometimes it's just hit or miss. And it was different movements because I went back to Iron Temple and hadn't been there in 4 or 5 weeks. So that may have played a part. I did the pendulum where I didn't do it before. But I also didn't train as heavy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that could be too. I wasn't used to the higher repetitions, and there's a lot of variables there. But you can't make a black and white statement and say that a workout is more productive based on soreness. I don't think you can do that.
Okay. How about you, Scott?
Yeah, my back rarely ever got sore.
Really?
Unless I did a lot of high. The only thing that really made my back sore was that if I did a lot of chins.
Huh.
You know, but no, like especially when I lifted heavy. It would be hardly sore at all.
Yeah, I'd go so far as to say this too. Go ahead and go do leg extensions on full lockout with 40 or 50 pounds and do reps of 30 and rest 30 seconds and do 15 sets. Do you really think that, and I'm asking this of anybody, not just you guys, but anybody listening, do you really think that a 50-pound leg extension, because your legs, you come away and your legs are sore, maybe they're crippling sore, that that's going to be somehow this switch that targets growth when you can get under and squat and walk away with a load that is, you know, five times that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the load. I'm going to, you know, it's just, again, that those types of examples are, they kind of reinforce my argument that I don't think it has as much to do with soreness. I mean, Christ, you can go ride a bike. And, you know, if your legs get sore, you're not going to be like, yeah, that's better than squatting.
Good point. Yeah. All right. Well, then I'll keep lifting heavy. That's it, guys. That's all the questions we have for the day. How about that?
I'm going to tell you this. Take your True Nutrition. When you get Team Skip Blend,
yes.
Combine the Mocha Java with French Vanilla. One scoop of each.
Yeah.
And even if you're not dieting, put some ice in it. It'll be the goddamn best protein drink you've ever had.
Yeah?
Yep.
This is I'm still waiting for chocolate. My bag to show up.
I'm waiting for mine because I'm low as shit right now. I actually just had to get an extra 5-pound bag because they were out of salted caramel.
Yeah?
So, yeah, they were out the last time I ordered. So
you like the salted caramel?
I do. Sometimes I'll put the salted caramel with vanilla. Mm. I combine them. I always combine them because then it gives me a little slightly different flavor than what I'm used to. They're also working. I've been trying to push Dante a little bit to get an apple pie flavor because with my blend is a little thicker. It's not thin like whey. And I think it would be really good. But he said they've tried it in the past, but they haven't gotten the flavor down yet. But he would go back and bring that up I think it would be really good if they got it down.
What do you think about the chocolate peanut butter cup?
I always liked it, but the reason I stay away from peanut butter is I always eat a nut butter with my protein drinks anyway to slow down the rate that protein hits my bloodstream. So to me, it's kind of redundant. Okay. I'd rather just get, you know, like as an example, if it's peanut butter flavored, but I have cashew butter, yeah, pistachio butter. It's like, I'll just have that with the food. Chocolate coconut, I think, is great.
Ooh, yeah. I've only had a couple, or I haven't had this before, so I just got 2 pounds of it. But that's what I got, was the chocolate peanut butter. Just sampling the powder. Tastes good. But I do the same thing. People do
that. Break up the flavors. Yeah. Like, instead of getting, you know, chocolate coconut, get a bag of chocolate, get a bag of coconut. That way, if you have three or four bags, then you have all these different flavor combinations instead of only two.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. Well, guys, you can go to truenutrition.com, use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. And, of course, go to getazoth.com, use our code ADVICES10. Or, of course, we got the Amazon link to Azoth. You can check them out over there as well. ADVICES10, I guess, also works over there. For another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, you can go over to teamskip.com if you want to reach out to Skip. And, of course, check out the Intense Muscle Message Board. And, hey, I should have mentioned this at the top, but, guys, if you enjoy our content, do me a favor. If you're watching this on the YouTube page, hit the like button and leave us a comment. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. All that stuff helps to boost us in the algorithm. Guys, we'll see you soon. Thanks, guys. Out.